Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. We're live from Henry Ford College today. The college is, again, not officially open for business today. It's the last closed Friday before the fall semester and other activities happen here. Fall semester begins on August 28th. That's a week from next week, Thursday. Okay, so if you're thinking of taking a class, you better do it now because classes are filling up big time. Because on Friday, even today, though, at our Welcome Center, which is a building just north of the student lot here at the college campus, Evergreen Road, just south of Ford Road in Dearborn, at the Welcome Center, they are open Fridays, by golly, in order to help people get admitted and also to enroll in the fall semester if they need any counseling help or want to apply for financial aid. All those services are open today. And starting next week, Monday, we'll be back to a five-day week for all the different services here at the college and information. There'll be faculty division directors in their office to answer questions. The faculty doesn't report until the week after, but nonetheless, it's back to business next week and even next Friday. Again, everything administrative here at the college is going to be open regular schedule, 40-hour week, Monday through Friday, starting next week. And again, as I said, classes start actually on the 28th, Thursday, August 28th. I'm joined in the studio today by John Conroy. Welcome back, John.
Well, thank you, Jay. It's very great to be back.
And John lives on Gros Isle, so let's start with the headline story this week everywhere. All that rain that fell last Monday, historic deluge, hasn't been that bad or that much in that period of time for 89 years. What about Gros Isle, little island there? Did you have any flooding?
We had very little flooding. Don't know exactly about some of the homes interior-wise, but as far as overall flooding, regular roadways, no. Some of the parking lot areas were flooded, yes.
Okay, so your house was okay?
Our house was okay,
yep. Okay, well, that's interesting. Today on the radio, and I think I was listening to WDET, there was a report that Dearborn reported that 40% of the about 30,000 households in Dearborn were flooded. Now, I don't know to what extent that would qualify. I mean, 1 inch, is that flooding? A few drops of water. That seemed extremely high, but a lot of people have had severe floods. My house in East Dearborn is sort of up on a mound of sand. Originally, like 150 years ago, there were sand dunes there. After the last ice age, for some reason, just a lot of sand was there. It wasn't a beach or anything, you know, it wasn't by water. But so sand is a great absorber and, you know, it takes care of that extra water and just makes it go through rather than pool up. And so, in fact, it's been difficult. I've lived there for more than 20 years now in that location, and it's difficult to grow grass unless every year you throw more topsoil down because it's only 3 or 4 inches, and then it's pure sand under that. And not much of what we like to think of as landscaping grows in that much sand. So I think it really, and this is a FYI, folks, but before you buy a house anywhere, you should look into these kinds of drainage issues, these kinds of runoff issues. Not just has the basement ever flooded, that you would ask the realtor, and hopefully they'd be truthful, but there should even be geological reports that talk about the nature of the land and the substructure under the house. I mean the substrata, excuse me, under the house. What is it? A rock? Is it sand? What are the potential issues in the future? Now, there's no perfect place, although it's interesting that Michigan is one of the more perfect places in the whole United States in terms of the infrequency of disasters. We generally don't have hurricanes or even tornadoes or flooding or earthquakes or volcanoes as much as any other place in the United States. And I know we're on a little bit of a volcanic fault line here in the Great Lakes, but it's a very minor one. It's not like the San Andreas Fault in California. I have a friend who's moving to Florida, And they said, oh, it was, in fact, it was a very fancy upper-class town in Florida. And they said, oh, yeah, we're building a new condo there. Got a great deal. It's on a floodplain, which means it said zero sea level. That's why they got the great deal. So good luck. You know, Miami, they say, is going to be all the lower levels underground are going to be flooded in 20 years. They've already had severe flooding there. That Miami may be one of the first to go after New Orleans, of course. New Orleans has the dams and levees built. They won't hold, but they're already under sea level in most of downtown New Orleans. They're below it. So if the dams and levees don't hold, and they won't in another major hurricane or something, then down they go. And personally, I thought after Katrina hit, they shouldn't repopulate New Orleans. They should rebuild for everybody in the suburbs at higher ground, or move them all to Detroit. We've got some available space. Just give them bus tickets, and we'll rebuild the city of Detroit and make it new New Orleans. You know, New Norland. New Norland.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, because they wouldn't have to worry about flooding here or hurricanes. And so it's actually not a bad place, but there are some older houses in the city and some older sewer systems, we'll get to that commentary in a minute, that definitely are causing problems right now.
Well, as Mr. Jefferson would say, move them on up. But also...
Thomas Jefferson?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
But also on Gros Isle, because of the low water table and tree growth, there's so many trees with roots that come up right to the level of the land that we have a big need for fill dirt always. If you're putting in if you want to see grass grow, if you don't do that, then what I have and other neighbors have is a lot of mossy areas where trees and vegetation are. It's difficult to grow grass.
You just gotta learn to love moss then. I thought that used to be a big trademark of the Deep South, where it was so humid that they have moss all over, and that was supposed to be lovely, you know, and as decorative. It wasn't the only thing, you know, but it was supposed to be very decorative and southernish. Well, yeah,
cypress trees, etc.
Right, that too. Yeah, they don't want to do that. So our condolences, if not our mops, go out to people of Dearborn still having trouble. Our big band DJ couldn't do his show this morning because he lives in Dearborn. He doesn't have any hot water. I'm not sure if something happened to his hot water heater because of the flooding, but it was flooding related anyway.
Yeah.
And you got to take care of, you know, your home at times like this, and it's been difficult. I was surprised. I went from my house by one route to Allen Park on Tuesday to get a haircut, and I decided to come back north on Southfield. Well, I hadn't kept up on the reports. Outer Drive, the underpass, Southfield underpass at Outer Drive, and the underpass at Michigan Avenue on Southfield were not just a little flooded. The water level was all the way up to the bottom of the overpass, which I'm guessing is 13, 14 feet.
Yep.
You know, and any car that was down at the bottom was totally covered. I mean, I don't know if some cars were stuck in that point, but I've never seen flooding like that. Of course, I'm not 89 years old or older to have experienced the other situation, but that was amazing. And of course, that was a day after Tuesday, a day after the storms hit. And but I guess the sewer systems couldn't take it, and they probably clogged up somehow too. And that is very, very unfortunate. Of course, the report is that you'll see in the Dearborn Press and Guide this weekend. It's on their website, of course. And I think it's been reported everywhere in Detroit. Most of the mayors have issued emergency declarations. Mayor O'Reilly did it on Wednesday for Dearborn. And by doing that, of course, they're advocating on behalf of the Dearborn residents and businesses dramatically affected by the storm, and will be providing crucial information in support of Wayne County and the state of Michigan, which have already issued declarations of disaster. And of course, those disaster declarations are an important part of the process for Dearborn to potentially become eligible for state help and federal resources. State's declaration of disaster is necessary, too, for the Federal Emergency Management Agency, lovingly known as FEMA, to potentially, I put that in myself there, to potentially offer financial assistance, including to affected property owners. So that's just a legal way, first of all, to take care of that need for money and other help, I guess, coming from the state or the federal government, and the county, too. And this, it's in this statement here that Mayor O'Reilly made Wednesday that estimated that 40% of residential and commercial properties experienced flooding or sewer backups. And it says flooding destroyed water heaters. I didn't know it could do that.
Right.
I don't know how. I guess it could short out your pilot light if it's electric or even gas fired.
If the water goes up high enough, then it's
and it can contaminate or corrode all of that.
That's
at
right.
the bottom. Yeah. Furnaces and also any major appliances. I read that someone in the paper had to get rid of their deep freeze, their freezer that they kept in the basement. Mm-hmm. That would be. And they lost everything inside, I suppose, because they had no way to keep it cold or may already defrosted or something. But any major appliances, especially if they're plugged into electricity down at the low level, like
yes.
most plugs are, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, those would all short out. Electricity would go for the house even, I guess, or at least a few fuses will be blown. And they say more than 75% of Dearborn's roads, including state, local, and county roads, were flooded and impassable. Well, I didn't go out Monday, so all major freeways were shut down on Monday. I know that they just opened I-94 at Warren today. I saw a news report on that. Oakwood Hospital was closed to ambulances due to having more than 4 feet of water in its basement and a flooded emergency room. Well, you know that why that was. They built the emergency room on a lower level, below ground level. I mean, thank you very much, you know, Oakwood Hospital. Maybe you'll think twice about that or get a better pump or something in the future. Of course it's going to flood, although say, oh, it's only once every 89 years. But that's a very important resource. I wonder where they sent them. Where's the next closest big-time hospital? Oakwood has another one in Wyandotte.
Yeah, Wyandotte's
Wyandotte
where
General.
Where they went, you know.
Yeah, okay. City Hall, our old City Hall, was flooded and extensively damaged. So it's a good thing we're getting out of there, huh? Because we knew about the roof. The roof had to be redone.
Yes.
And that was another thing that supposedly Art Space was going to have to do. They're going to have to do a little more, I guess. Although maybe the city's going to try to fix some of it before they officially move out this fall. They don't say here if there's any damage of the new City Hall building, which hasn't been occupied for 6 or 8 years now. So and had roof and leakage problems, as was reported before. So has that been repaired yet? That would be an interesting question for me to find out. A lot of people want to know about the new City Hall. Mm-hmm. Let's see, anything else here. If you do have sewer backup and flooding, you should call the Dearborn Sewage Division. They have a sewerage division. Mm-hmm. At 943-2042, because the city would like to compile and analyze the data. If you want to know how to clean up a flooded basement appropriately, cityofdearborn.org, the city website, has information now on basement flooding. Look for that topic there, okay? Cityofdearborn.org. Also on the website are instructions how to file a claim with the city for property damaged by flooding. Now, specific conditions do apply for potential payments, and those are outlined at the website. You can also visit, if you want to sue somebody, the legal department at City Hall to pick up the same claim form, though, from Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And it's important to note that City of Dearborn employees are not distributing claim forms door-to-door, nor is it necessary to have an attorney file. Apparently, there's some scams going on about people that want information from you door to door. In fact, they just want your money, ultimately, or a check or something. And so that's not recommended that you do that just because somebody knocks on your door. Even if they say they're from the city, nobody from the city is making those door to door stops. Wouldn't have enough people to do it, I bet. Also, those affected by flooding are strongly encouraged to take photographs of damaged items and to save all receipts for services and materials related to basement cleanups. You'll certainly need that if you're going to ask for reimbursement somehow. Also, the city continues to devote significant additional resources to the curbside collection of flood-damaged items throughout Dearborn. Residents affected by water and sewage damage can put their trash on the curb regardless of their usual collection day. And I took a walk through my neighborhood yesterday, and I saw a number of people had you know, cut up the carpeting they had put down in their basement floors, and they rolled it up, and you're supposed to bundle it as best you can or put it in bags so it's easy to pick up. There's no fee, by the way, in Dearborn for the bulk pickup of flood-damaged items. So you can put a lot of stuff out. You can put furniture and so on. Now, related to that, they had to do a supplemental release. Let me see here. I'm grabbing the other sheet. First-time homeowner tackles flooding fiasco. No, that's not it. Where is it? Oh, I'll just have to ad-lib it. No, here it is. Curbside scavengers not allowed to scatter items. Okay, city ordinance in Dearborn prohibits curbside scavengers from creating litter and scattering trash while looking for discarded flood-damaged materials they deem of value. Or even on other days. I mean, a lot of people come by and say, oh, they put it out to get rid of it. I could use that, or I'll refinish that wood furniture and I'll put it together. I know my daughter does that in Allen Park.
Does she?
Yeah. And boy, has she got the stuff in her garage to refinish. But the interesting thing, the furniture she picks up, it's solid wood. Mm. They don't make it like that anymore. I mean, it's really sturdy, but it might need new finishing. Now, she doesn't pick up things that maybe were damaged by a flood, because that can be mold and mildew and all kinds of ugly stuff. Yeah. Anyway, residents are seeing more people rummaging through that trash, but they should be aware scavengers can be penalized under city ordinance, which says, and I quote, no person shall deposit or cause to be deposited, sort, scatter, throw, drop, or leave any waste, rubbish, or garbage on any public or private place in the city. Well, that takes care of all of the details, right?
Should do it. Yep.
Is there anything else we've left out there? I doubt it. Also against the ordinance for any person to litter or permit to be littered on any of the streets, alleys, sidewalks, or other public places by throwing, depositing, tracking, dropping, dumping, or spillage any trash, paper, dirt, mud, ashes, sand, glass, leaves, garbage, debris, or other materials, or to deposit or cause the same. Some lawyer wrote that, I bet.
That sounds pretty legalese to
me. Yeah, and probably the city council worked on that for months. Well, what else can we put in there? What else is there? I guess you can't just put et cetera. They do put other materials at the end. So careful what you're doing. So if you're scavenging and you take the pile down or something, you can't just leave it on somebody's driveway or on their sidewalk or on the grass. You need to pile it back up neatly, I guess. The maximum penalty is $500 or 93 days in jail. Why is it 93 days? Why not 90?
I don't know.
What's wrong with rounding it off?
Yeah.
93, that really hurts. 90, you can do that, no problem, but 93 days. Wow. So there is a non-emergency police number, and there's anonymous suspicious activity hotline, and I'll give you those. The non-emergency police number where you can report these scavengers, if they're messing things up, at 943-2241. And you get this on the City of Dearborn website, of course, too. And the anonymous suspicious behavior activity hotline is 943-3030. And then somebody will come and investigate, supposedly. So that's going on, but the city has got those ordinances out there, so you just somehow get in touch with the city, and they'll do the right thing for you, I guess.
Yep.
Last but not least on that. Nope, it's not that one. It's not that one. It's got to be that one, John. Okay, I'm taking it back. Because I'm going to roll here. Flood coverage insurance.
Yes.
Okay. It doesn't cover water coming through your walls or over the top of your walls. Okay. It's only that is flood coverage. Okay. Flood coverage only covers that. If it comes out of the sewer or out of your sink in the basement, that's sewage overflow. And that's not covered by flood coverage insurance. You need a separate, as they call it, rider on your insurance plan to cover sewer overflow, you know, damage. And so if you don't have it, too bad. Sorry, but I guess nobody told you.
It would be connected with water main breakage type of events, you know.
Infrastructure problem, but like I did have a little water coming through one of my basement walls.
Yeah.
Of course, it always does whenever it rains, like for a deluge like that for 10 minutes or 3 hours or whatever. Walls, that one wall, not all walls, all the walls seem to have little cracks, and I guess I should seal it, but it's so infrequent I haven't worried, because it comes down, it's on the floor, it goes to the drain, it's all done. It doesn't damage anything. I've cleared out that space. But that's flood damage, actually, if it comes through the wall. Mm-hmm. or over the top of the wall somehow. But if it comes out of the sewer, out of the drain, or your sink drain, then that's a different kind of insurance. Now, maybe some policies include that, but other policies may not. Even the, sewer backup insurance can range, according to a quote here in a Press and Guide article that will appear in their Sunday edition, that insurance can range from $30 to $50 a year, depending on the coverage. Typically, you had for $5,000 to $10,000 worth of coverage. And they say that if your whole basement flooded and you're going to have a professional company come in to, well, get the water out of there and to clean it, I mean, really clean it, steam clean it, whatever, and maybe even to fix whatever they can fix. I mean, I don't know what, but it's going to be more than $5,000 or $10,000 for a company on the outside to come in and totally drain and clean your basement. Now, some of that you can do yourself, of course, but they say that's the maximum of coverage is about $10,000, and of course that won't even replace, like, you have a big TV set down there or something that's damaged, or a couple of appliances, a small kitchen, that's all gone.
Yep.
So, you know, and that's not covered except up to the limit of your sewage backup insurance. But if you're interested in that for the future, because the future may come sooner rather than later, it's $30 to $50 a year. Okay. We'll come back with more news here. We're going to get the big story out of the way, even though this has been covered before by all the local media. But here in Dearborn, I thought you'd want to hear some of those details. Here's a commentary I want to give you from Jack Lessenberry. And he's talking about preparation for all kinds of problems here in Michigan. Of course, one of them would be for the sewer problems. But take a listen to this, and we'll be back after this Jack Lessenberry commentary provided to us by Michigan Public Radio.
Last winter was the snowiest and one of the coldest ever in metropolitan Detroit. 3 days ago, the area was hit by an absolutely devastating rainstorm and the following floods. We don't know if these events were influenced by climate change. We do know that the infrastructure, from freeway ramps to storm drains, was inadequate to deal with the problems. Our roads were in urgent need of investment before this happened, and many are in worse shape now. For years, we've known that the water infrastructure in southeast Michigan was in need of major upgrading. We haven't done any of it. And what is most baffling is that this horrendous weather event hasn't really motivated our leaders to pledge to do something to try to keep us safe in the future. Instead, what we're hearing is bland excuses. Some are saying that no amount of improvements could have prepared the system for 5 inches of rain in an hour. The mayor of Warren, perhaps the worst-hit city, called this a once-in-200-years rainfall. Unfortunately, this may well have the effect of making us think we don't have to do too much. If we won't get another environmental disaster for 200 years, we don't have to worry. Well, guess what? We need to worry, and worry now. Yes, it's been 89 years since a rain like this one. But the population then was a third of what it is now, and we did not depend nearly as much on highways, appliances, and machines. Nobody who's looked at the evidence can doubt that the climate is changing, regardless of why. Yet nobody in leadership seems interested in seriously addressing this. Our major party candidates for governor have been squabbling like school kids. A spokesman for Democrat Mark Schauer complained yesterday that Governor Rick Snyder waited too long to declare this a disaster. The Republican state chair shot back that Schauer had no idea what was happening because he was campaigning in other parts of the state, none of which is helpful. The only sane look ahead I've seen came from Mike Nystrom, the executive vice president of the Michigan Infrastructure and Transportation Association. Yesterday, he said, "Delaying annual investment in infrastructure is like sticking our heads in the sands and hoping it doesn't rain or snow." And then he added, "The Michigan legislature can't ignore the situation any longer." Well, I wish Nystrom was right, but our legislators have shown an amazing ability to ignore reality. They refuse to appropriate new money to fix the roads. Yesterday was one of the rare summer days they were in session, and the only significant thing on their agenda was wolf hunting. Yet they all want to be reelected. Local governments, by the way, aren't blameless either. 12 years ago, Lansing did authorize $1 billion in bonds for communities to repair sewers, but they were afraid to take on the debt, so they did nothing. Years ago, the novelist Rebecca West wrote that mankind's epitaph might well be, "It seemed like a good idea at the time." Speaking of ideas, it would be nice if our leaders had some.
So to complete my comments, that was Jack Lessenberry, Michigan Public Radio. The infrastructure, things like sewers, nobody sees those. And so politicians especially feel, well, we don't have to do anything because nobody notices how bad they're getting. Well, the exception to that, though, is here in Dearborn. We have a project still going, probably will continue on for another 10 years, that was required by the federal government to handle the overflow of the Rouge River in our area. And every city is required to have overflow pools or some other way to prevent the overflow from getting into the sewer system and just killing the sewer system. Although after this last deluge, you know, it's in bad shape anyway. But the sewers in a lot of places in Dearborn are being replaced by much bigger capacity sewers. Yeah, why? Because we tried to do the runoff pool or the underground tank and under Mayor Guido, and they had terrible problems. They had bad information about the substrata, the geology under Dearborn. A worker died, in fact, and not because of Dearborn, but and that company was fired from the job, and so they still have holes in the ground in parts of East Dearborn because of that project, which has now been abandoned. And what they decided to do under Mayor O'Reilly was to simply, it's not simple, but logical, to repair the bad sewers in Dearborn, the aging sewers that are a problem in all of metro area, you know, under people's houses and down their streets and so on, underneath their streets, with higher capacity, that is bigger sized sewer lines, but all brand new. So if there was a sewer that was, attacked by roots of a tree or something and was partially leaking, that'll all be fixed. And so all through West Dearborn, through a lot of West Dearborn, that's been part of the solution to the combined sewer overflow or CSO project, which is still going on. And it's got, I think, another 8 to 10 years before they even finish the plan for that protection. But what it means is an awful lot of those areas which had their streets tore up for months and so on, they have new, much higher capacity sewer lines. So the infrastructure has been upgraded and they have the greater capacity. And yes, it's $300 million and counting, the total cost of this project for the bill payers of the city of Dearborn. In fact, Mayor Guido, when it first came out that it was going to cost that, he said, he was still in office, of course, and said, to off the record, of course, well, as soon as people find out about this cost, they're going to kick me out of office. They're going to not reelect me because it just, you know, it's too big a cost. Nobody wants to pay it, even though we're forced to pay it by the federal government. We're forced to find an answer. And we don't have any open land like they did in Dearborn Heights to do an evaporating pool. You know, it would take a couple of large fields to do like a 3-foot deep evaporating pool, not a wading pool, but an evaporating pool to let the extra overflow go there and then just evaporate, you know, and not go into the sewer systems and cause those to become overloaded and all the bad parts of, the bodily waste of the sewer system would move into the water supply system. And they don't want that if you can keep it separate. So it's a great idea. So a lot of Dearborn, again, the project's not done yet, but Dearborn is on the way to probably having the newest sewer system in the whole Detroit metro area. Certainly a lot newer than Detroit, because we decided to do two projects in one, fix the aging sewer lines even before they were in crisis, and also, of course, make them bigger, higher capacity so that they wouldn't overflow with toxic elements in the case of a downpour like this. So Dearborn is a little better off, and those of you that for the last 3 to 5 years have put up with having your streets demolished for new sewers, I think probably are not the ones that had the flooding.
Right.
That would be my guess, because that shouldn't have happened with an all-new sewer line going down the middle of your street. Okay, just want to make that point. Okay, here you're listening to the new WHFR Journal. It is August 15th, 2014. My name is Jay Koronek. I'm here with John Conroy, WHFR News Director. And we're talking about, of course, the stories that matter to you most because they're right next door. And sometimes we even can scoop the papers because the papers put some stories out on their website, but they don't get in the papers for a while. Here's the latest update, new today from pressandguide.com. Five Metro Detroit Muslims are suing the federal government over placement on the terror watch list. And this story developed this week. It was in first the Dearborn Press and Guide on Wednesday, I think. It started in last Sunday's paper on the Press and Guide. Officials dispute report that says Dearborn is number two terrorist city in America. So this was on a website in the U.S., but even the website said, this is a secret report about who's on the terror watch list that we got, and it doesn't seem fair because Dearborn only has 100,000 residents, but we're number two in the whole, in all the cities in the United States after New York City as having suspected terrorists living here. It just can't be true. So a number of elected officials and people from prosecutors' offices, federal prosecutors, got together and reported last week that that report's got to be wrong because it just. But of course, you say, "Well, let's look at the report. Who is on the watch list, or also known as the no-fly list?" Nobody knows, except maybe somebody in Homeland Security or the federal government or the NSA, because they know everything. National Security Administration. They snoop on everyone, including congressmen too. Which I think the man's name is John Bennett, and he's head of the NSA, and he totally guaranteed Congress that we're not snooping on your computers on your desks. We're not doing that. I'm telling you, we're not doing that. Well, a week and a half ago, he said, okay, we're doing it.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to tell you, you know, because I'm supposed to keep secrets, you know, and that's. They're spying on everybody all the time, but this no-fly list is extremely inconvenient, especially if your name happens to be exactly like somebody whose name is on the list for maybe some reason. But if it's not public, if it's a secret, then you don't know if your name is there, and if all of a sudden you are arrested as a suspected terrorist or whatever, I mean, it's almost too late to prove your innocence because of the Patriot Act. Remember that? Right after 9/11? Okay. In 2003, the Patriot, I think that was the year Patriot Act came right after or right before the 9/11 incident. Maybe it was 2002 even, in the fall of that year. That if the government says you are a terrorist, you have no right to attorney or a trial. If they don't want to, they can grab you, hold you, they can send you to a prison somewhere else in the world, and you have no rights. And yet, they may have no proof. They only suspect you of something. And that is really scary. The Patriot Act and all of its provisions should have been taken off the books years ago. But our politicians are too chicken to vote against patriotism because that's the name. You want to vote against patriotism? You know, somebody is going to use that against you in your next election. You voted against patriotism. They always name these laws some wonderful, glorious name, and they don't usually have anything to do with the name. And, of course, as it was stated, only one congressperson ever read the Patriot Act before they voted on it. The person that read it, Russ Feingold of Minnesota, he voted against it. He was the only one to vote against it. But he actually read it and said, oh my goodness, I can't vote for that. That's totally un-American. And if it's un-American, I would guess that the terrorists have won. You know, I mean, that was what they wanted to do, right? Undercut our freedoms and our liberties and our rights Is, of course, all opinions on this show, John.
It was just time for that, Jay, the disclaimer. Opinions expressed on by our hosts on this show are not necessarily those of anyone else's at HFC. And we also encourage free will thinking and any other views that you might have.
Yeah, even if they're not free will, but just keep those views coming. And, of course, Jack Lessenberry, any other opinions expressed on the show by even these pre-recorded voices, they have not been authorized commanded to us to present to you. So, keep your mind open. Anything you hear here on the show, think about it and find out other information. Talk to friends, neighbors, and experts, and get the information. Then you decide to do some action that might be appropriate to resolve a problem. So,
being on the air is certainly with our listeners' support is a great privilege. Mm-hmm. And thanks again, and let's keep making waves.
Let's continue
to make waves.
Yeah, but not in your flooded basement.
No. Leave the waves down.
Kids, don't play in that water. No.
Don't push it up too high.
Yeah, no. Don't splash around. No, you can't go swimming down there, Johnny. No. I'm sure that came up several times. Oh, Mom, there's a pool in the basement. Can I go swimming? Oh, my goodness. No, not this time. Anyway, so now, as I said today, actually, there's a lawsuit suing the federal government over the placement of supposedly all these people from Dearborn, and I wish them well. You know, it's the Michigan chapter on the Council on American Islamic Relations. They filed the suit. Many other people should be part of that suit, like the ACLU and others, because it's just wrong to have a terror watch list, which can cause trouble to everybody, or cast aspersions that Dearborn is the second biggest terrorist coven in the United States, like witches. And that's just, it can't be true, okay? But I think, I liken this to the credit check problem. Okay, you've got credit reports done by at least a couple of different agencies. And in that case, that's great because there's not just one credit reporting agency. There's at least three major ones. Mm-hmm. And if they disagree, then that's kind of evidence for you that somebody got it wrong. You know, so plus, it may take months, but if you discover an error on your credit report that says you didn't pay some bills with a certain credit card or whatever, or a certain loan, you can dispute that. You can present evidence. And it, as I said, it may take several months, but you can change that. You can get that, what looks like a negative, taken off that credit report. But with the no-fly list or this terrorist list, first of all, they won't even tell you if you're on it. And number two, there might not even be any evidence except somebody said you were suspicious. There might not even, so you can't even dispute evidence when there really isn't any. It was just, they put your name, well, somebody said you're suspicious, so your name's on there for that reason. Well, who was it? Well, I don't know. Just somebody, well, that is crazy. It's just like in the McCarthy hearings, this is not Eugene McCarthy, but Joe McCarthy, back in the 1950s, a congressman, senator, in fact, that, I think he was a senator. Yes, he was a senator. And he was going on literal communist witch hunts, communist as witches, bad people, all communists must be bad people. And he would have press conferences every week to help his investigation, supposedly, or to publicize them. And he would have a list of names, and he'd read these names off. People all around the country that are suspected of being communists. Mm-hmm. And these people would lose their jobs. They'd be fired immediately because phone calls from various right-wing groups would have gotten, it wasn't McCarthy, but would have said, we'll pick it in front of your business if you don't fire this person, because Joe McCarthy said he's a communist. He said he's a suspected communist. And so there were people who were killing themselves. I mean, committing suicide because they had no life left. They could not get a job anywhere because they were on Joe McCarthy's list. At least the list was public, and they wouldn't know whether they were on it or not. Yep. But how do they get off it? They don't, ever. There's no way, there was no process to get off the list. Now, a few people tried to sue one of the right-wing groups that was putting the pressure on businesses that still employed some of these people. But when it finally got adjudicated, some 10, 15 years later in the courts, and these groups were found guilty of falsely accusing these people with no evidence. Of course, Joe McCarthy said so. Of course, he was dead rather quickly in the 50s. He was censored by Congress to never speak again, never say anything. That's how bad it was. And you know, this is a media history story here. You know who it was that got him censored, John?
No, I don't. Nope.
Edward R. Murrow.
Edward R. Murrow.
Okay. He went on CBS one night, and it was unscripted, and they said, please don't do this, Edward. I mean, this is behind the scenes. It was in a couple movies they made about Edward R. Murrow that were very good, too, but it's in books. And he said, I have to say something. Hmm. He had the courage to say how un-American it was to ruin someone's life by casting aspersions about being a communist. And, of course, you know, if in those days they defined communist as somebody who was planning, actively planning the violent overthrow of the U.S. government. In the 1960s, it was found by the Supreme Court of the United States not a crime to be a communist. So let me straighten that out. It's not a crime to be a communist as long as you don't plot the violent overthrow of our government. And communists don't have to do that. That's not part of the required of all communists, okay? And many communist parties have existed in the U.S. I don't think there is a national one right now. I don't know. They haven't been on the ballot in Michigan for quite a long time, calling themselves communist, because it is kind of a bad image still there, unfortunately, especially if you're a patriot. But nonetheless, it's not illegal to be a communist and espouse, you know, larger socialism, let's say, throughout the country. But in those days, it was assumed that communists meant you were plotting against the government, violent overthrow and all that. And so that wasn't a good thing. But there was no evidence that McCarthy's list actually pointed to people who were trying to do that. And so when it finally got adjudicated, the head of the right-wing organization, he died in the 60s too. So there was no way these people could get any money, their job backs. It was, you know, because again, the court procedures took years and years, and they had to pay lawyers thousands and thousands of dollars to support their side. And finally, so all these people just for no provable reason were kicked out of jobs and work, and they're forever. And as I said, some of them just gave up on life.
Little solace for all that time that they suffered. That's
right.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm against. I'll come right out here, not as forthright and honest in a difficult situation as Edward R. Murrow certainly was, but that to have this terror watch list is wrong because it's only suspicions, okay? And to have it not be public is wrong, and to not have a way to challenge your name being on it is wrong. And for that matter, the Patriot Act, I've already said, is wrong and should be, what do they call it when they remove a law? I'm blacking out now. But they can pass a law that rescinds the first law. Yeah. I guess that's a good word as any. Yeah. Okay. So we wish good luck to this Michigan chapter of the council. Personally, I think as long as the Patriot Act is still in place, this lawsuit will go nowhere. But at least it gets some press, and it gets people thinking and talking about this, and maybe something will happen in the future that when our politicians get some courage to do the right thing to keep America in the spirit, I think, that it was founded. Although a lot of people think we've gone too far away. I think we made some very good changes, but this whole Patriot Act thing and this suspected terrorist list is wrong. I'm not going to make a comment. I have made comments before about the militarization of local police forces. That's a big story in all the national news because of the event in, was it Mississippi or Missouri? Anyway, Missouri, I believe. Ferguson?
Ferguson, Missouri.
Ferguson, yep. Missouri. Yep. Obviously, you put people and train people as SWAT teams, and they lose all sensibility of being a human being. And it's a problem. I think Dearborn SWAT team has been trained pretty well. I've seen them in action a couple times, and they're not out of control. Sure, there's dangers out there. I heard a police officer call in to a talk show this morning on radio saying, you know, we need them. There's all kinds of dangers and high-powered rifles and, you know, we need armored cars because our cars, you know, with the kinds of bullets that are out there, they won't protect us being in the car. Yeah, but how many are there? How many terrorist acts in the United States, we'll call them terrorist acts, how many violent acts like that are there really? We cannot protect everybody, including every police officer, from every possible threat. Even if they were in full military garb all the time, there'd still be ways to cause injury and danger for them. But I do think, as many actors say, if you dress the part, if you get into the makeup, you get into the costume, you sort of become that character. And of course, all of our TV shows, all the big violent movies, they show you how to be a wild and crazy, supposedly a hero with a big gun. They show you. No, it's for entertainment purposes. But I'm sure those images are flashing in these officers' minds, even if they had appropriate sensitive training. It's hard not to follow the cartoon comic book approach to life. And I'm sure they're doing the best they can. In Dearborn, it's a constant problem because we've got the equipment. We've got the outfits. We've got the weapons. Every city does now. And even when they don't need it, when they got unarmed people around, they're pointing automatic weapons at them in their full riot garbs. Something's bound to happen, and it won't be good for the innocent people. Somebody said today, oh, you know, we found out that kid that they shot, he stole a cigar from a convenience store. Well, absolutely. That's a hanging offense, as they say in the Old West, right? Yeah, let's fill him full of holes, you know, from automatic weapons.
Impale him.
He stole a cigar, even if he did. I'm not saying he didn't, no suspicion, but how dare they even suggest that as if it's some reason why he should be killed? Mm-hmm. It is crazy. Give me back that cigar, kid. Oh, jeez. It's just, so we've got to be careful of these overreactions in society, and a lot of it is media caused, and I apologize for the media, but not for the independent media like us here at WHFR, because I don't think we cause it.
No, we don't.
I think we try to be fair and balanced, which Fox News says they are, but they're not. And same thing for MSNBC. They go a little crazy at times, too. Shame on them. Okay, so there's the story about that story. Now we're going to move on. We have 15 minutes until Highway 61, The Best in the Blues with Joanne Kay, coming up at 2 o'clock all the way till 6 p.m. this afternoon. Great afternoon of great new blues music and local blues music. Okay, let me go down my list here of the other stories. Here's an interesting story from the Dearborn Times Herald. The Koran burner. Remember before Terry Jones was going to arrive in Dearborn? Couple months back, a number of Korans, the holy book of the Islamic religion, were burned here in Dearborn, several different locations. Well, after investigation by Dearborn police and actually some people in the Muslim community gave information, we found out it was a Muslim living in Dearborn who had a grudge against one of his own religious leaders that somehow didn't give him a loan or counsel him appropriately on financial troubles he was having. I didn't know religion's purpose was to give you money. But anyway, so he burned the holy book of his own religion in several locations. Well, I think it was over 2 days or 3 days. And so he went to trial, and he was adjudicated by Judge Salami in Dearborn here. I'm mentioning the name because I think he has ties to the Islamic community. I'm not saying he's Muslim, but you can't say, oh, it's some Christian that fined him, you know. Or, well, the fine was only a couple $100 for this. Now, maybe, certainly in certain parts of the world, you burn a Koran, you're going to be killed by that society. I mean, the religious leaders give the word to their politicians, their dupes, in civil government, and they grab them and they kill them. So, you know, this is one of those hanging offenses in some parts of the world. And here in America, I just wanted to make the sense is that, you know, a couple $100 for, you know, destruction of property, for littering, if you will, you know, the ashes on the pavement and so on. That's what happened. However you feel about that, I'm just saying who decided what and who is guilty of that, and it has been adjudicated now. So, but I a couple hundred dollars fine. It doesn't mean that anybody else should go out and burn any holy books, because that's not the way to protest anything. It doesn't have much meaning. Of course, I remember that in the 1960s, and John, you're not quite as old as I am, I hope, you know, people were burning American flags in protest to our presence and our killing of a lot of innocent people, too, in Vietnam.
Vietnam, sure.
And so what actually was the outcome of that? These people were arrested, and they were put in jail for a while and given fines. After it was adjudicated, went to the Supreme Court of the U.S., it was found that it was their right to burn an American flag because it was freedom of speech in this country. So that was seen as a way that they protested the war in Vietnam by burning the American flag. And so now if they were littering, or if the fire was a hazard for a building or whatever, like, you know, if it wasn't burned in a controlled way, then that would be a different crime, I think. But I think those people finally didn't have to pay any money for burning the U.S. flags. And boy, that's probably the holiest element of the American culture that we have.
One of the beauties of America, being able to celebrate the American flag as well as...
But I'm thinking if they burn the American flag today in some of these locations, like near a mosque or a church or something, that would be public littering and trash. It's like that ordinance from the city I read there, you know. Anybody that's doing anything with any materials that messes things up, you can get a big fine. And maybe that 93 days in jail, too.
That extra 3 days is going to make it.
But this guy didn't get jail time. He just got $200 fine. So there you go. Whether or not you think that's appropriate, that's the way it worked out. So don't try this yourself. It is able to be prosecuted in Dearborn, no matter what it is you're burning, I think. Okay. You point out to me, too, there was a letter to the editor by James Bull, who was a science professor who was apparently an adjunct, sorry, James, at a couple of local colleges, not Henry Ford College, but he felt he had to point out, because the media kept getting it wrong, that the Toledo water issue, that is the, and it was over a week ago now, but there was what was called in the media an algae bloom in Lake Erie that was contaminating Toledo's water supply, and they couldn't even use water out of their taps for a while, even if they tried to boil it,
right.
Which you always think, well, boiling, well, that'll kill all the bacteria. No, not in this case. And some people in Michigan, maybe not Monroe, but between Monroe and Toledo, they also depended on Toledo's water supply, so they had the same problem of no water for days and days. And apparently, I just read that... I keep in touch with some people that live in Burlington, Vermont, and that's right on Lake Champlain, which is a long lake that borders Vermont and eastern New York State, and home maybe of the sea monster, what do they call it? It's not Nessie, that's Loch Ness Monster. They call it Champ.
Champ.
Yeah, I call it Champ. It looks the same like Nessie, yeah. that's according to drawings and that. But anyway, and it's not Champ's fault. It's not Champ's fault here. But they're getting an algae bloom problem. Now, Burlington has not lost their water supply, but they say it's happening to them too. And that's a danger. Well, it turns out that James Bull, just to be clear, it's not algae. Don't blame the poor, innocent algae here. Algae is different than what's happening. Sure, algae can grow... And it can interfere with boats and transportation, and also has some toxic problems because if it gets into your water system, it's going to clog up things. Algae is a big plant. Okay,
right.
This is a bacteria. So Mr. Bull makes the point of saying this is a specific kind of bacteria, and let's be fair here to algae. I guess he's saying the point is that he admits what's the cause. It's the runoff
extra,
from the land, extra phosphorus, that we put as fertilizer on our grass and our public parks and on the food that we eat, all the farmlands. They put fertilizer in that's major component is phosphorus. Now, plants love it, and we love to have plants to eat, okay? But if it interferes with our clean water, and we've got the largest supply of desalinated, that is no salt water, fresh water in the world right here in the Great Lakes area, and they're so out of water, drinking water everywhere else in the U.S., especially in the Southwest and in California now, that we've got to protect this and keep it clean. Maybe we can resell it for $10 a gallon to people in California or something. I mean, something that really would be worth it. But they'd probably pay it. They're desperate now. And then we wouldn't have any water. If the rich people are the only ones that have water, we won't have any water. So we don't want to sell it. But we must stop now. Here's my opinion again.
Yep.
I'm sure it's James Bull's opinion and everybody else that's reported on this accurately. This is not just pollution from our sewer systems. This is the runoff from phosphorus from our land. And the only way to stop it, as they've done in Florida, is to ban the use of phosphorus in these fertilizers. Just say you can't sell it in this state. Florida has already done that. God bless them. Okay. And how did I find this out? I was trying to order some fertilizer through Amazon because I'm too lazy to go to the hardware store, which they just closed in Dearborn, but they opened another one. Yes, I know there's Home Depot and Lowe's and that. Well, it turns out that the brand that I was ordering was high in phosphorus, and it clearly said at Amazon.com cannot ship to Florida. So I looked that up. And Florida has a law against high phosphorus fertilizers being used on anything. Well, good for them. They're on the right track. Where are our Michigan legislators? Oh, they're on vacation. Excuse me. They can't do anything about anything while they're on vacation. And they don't do much, of course, when they're not on vacation, because this is something that needs to be done right now. We need to prevent the contamination of all of our fresh water supplies in the Great Lakes and need to ban phosphorus, or at least high concentrations of it in the fertilizers. That's right, the plants won't grow as well. Tough. There's got to be another answer, okay? There's got to be another answer, because it seems to me like you can go without food longer than you can go without water. I think it's something like you can't go without food more than 7 days, but you can go with water, you can last 30 days. There won't be much left of you after 30 days only on water, but fresh water will keep you going a lot longer. And the food, well, that's important too. But people always say you can get by with less food. I was on a diet for a couple of years. I really looked into that fasting diet that you can. It doesn't mean a fast food diet. Fasting diet. It means you do not eat food for a period of time. Now, not extended periods of time. That'll kill you. But there's a way to maybe go 18 hours without food for 1 day, and then you go back to normal eating for the other 2.5 days. And that's in the lab, they know that little mice can live a lot longer. If you're a little mouse, good for you, if you have reduced calories. So reduced calorie diets, I mean, even radically reduced. Check with your doctor, though. Okay, don't listen to Jay Koronick here. Check with your doctor. They may extend your life. I think even Dr. Oz says may. Extend your life. Because he's been sued too many times for going overboard on things like that. And by the way, they sue more people on the media for getting it wrong about doctoring than anything else. And politics, I mean, I can say anything I want to about the Patriot Act, but by God, although it probably will put me on the terrorist no-fly list.
You better watch that list.
Yeah. But if I say anything that, you know, that reduced calorie, for example, if I said, and I'm not, that reduced calorie diets will extend your life, oh my gosh, they'll swoop down on me. And they've even put some people in jail for making medical statements that are not part of the mainstream. So we've got to be careful about that. And so I'm not saying that. I'm just saying investigate things, take a look at things. There's some evidence that maybe you can get by on less food, but not less water. There's no evidence about that. That's the main point I'm making here, I hope. Okay. So, well, 3 minutes left, John. And so we've got some light news. What's some entertaining news coming up for this weekend?
Yes, let's talk about The Good Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
That's playing here at Henry Ford College. the last weekend of tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday afternoon. $12 for general admission, $10 for seniors, and $8 for students.
Yes, it's called the Adrey Auditorium, and it's in, as you said, I think, the Fine Arts Center here at Henry Ford College main campus.
And we interviewed Mary Bremer Beer a number of weeks ago, and it promises to be a very entertaining show.
Yeah, because, again, the writer of the short stories, the adapter of these short stories, is the famous comedic playwright Neil Simon.
Neil Simon,
right?
Who has stated laughter is the best medicine.
Yep.
True.
Plus, Random Acts of Theater is appearing this weekend at the center in Dearborn. That is the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. In Dearborn. Yes. And that's got a number of one-act plays by some great people. Five different directors, no waiting, and each of them got a chance to really focus on things. This is the Dearborn, it's Dearborn Area Theater Association, DATA.
Right. It's also part of the Summer Arts Academy that's happening.
Right. So a lot of people involved. It's going to be a great chance to see theater, and I think it's the last weekend. It's the last night tonight. According to the story in the paper, that is the Press and Guide from Wednesday, it said the last night is the 15th.
Well, I have the 16th as well.
Okay, let's hope so, because you've got to go out with a Saturday performance.
8 o'clock tonight and tomorrow night.
Right. Very good.
Yep.
And that's worth it because... And I'm not putting down Adrey Auditorium here, which is a nice facility, a nice intimate facility, but the big theater complex at Ford Community Performing Arts Center, I think they're using the big theater. That's, 1,000 seats and really cushy, nice seats. So wherever it is, maybe they have a setup in one of the other large rooms there, but Random Acts of Theater and The Good Doctor. And in Dearborn last weekend for both of them, and we don't think John is even sure the Random Acts will not be on Sunday.
I don't believe that's true. No.
Maybe you want and the Good Doctor on Sunday is at 2 p.m. by the way. So maybe do Random Acts tonight or tomorrow night, and the Good Doctor on Sunday. You get them both in. You get your theater for August. Yep.
And we have one more in Downriver as well. Probably more than one more, but wanted to talk about the Downriver Actors Guild Theater in Wyandotte is doing Seussical the Musical for the last weekend. The 15th and the 16th tonight and tomorrow night, and also Sunday at 2 o'clock.
Great.
7:30 actually on tonight and tomorrow night, and 3 o'clock on Sunday.
We're concluding now. Probably our podcast is already cut off, but... the last point I want to make is there's still a street fair to go to if you missed out on street fairs or city fairs in the last couple months. Melvindale, their DDA, Downtown Development Authority, street fair is going to be tomorrow and Sunday, August 16th and 17th. And there's a big ad in Press and Guide from last Sunday about that.